It's break time with Christopher J. Today we're going to take a look at Weird Al Yankovic. Let's time trip back to 1959 and start our story. Buckle up! So, in 1984, I turned 8 years old, and I got the best gift that any kid could ever get. I got the album Dare to Be Stupid by Weird Al Yankovic. It came on a cassette, and I remember staying in my room and putting it in my boombox and listening to it endlessly. I loved the song Yoda. I loved, of course, Like a Surgeon, because it's hard not to. I even had a soft spot in my heart for Slime Creatures from Outer Space. What I really loved about Weird Al is that it seemed like he wasn't taking anything too seriously. He seemed to have this approach to what he did with his songs where it was all about just making you laugh or going in an unexpected kind of way. He hit it big, obviously, with his parody of Beat It by Michael Jackson. I remember hearing Eat It. That was one of the first singles on vinyl that I ever owned. I think my mom got it for me. And I remember watching his music video and was astounded by the fact that it seemed to be a shot for shot, same angle remake of Michael Jackson's with, of course, a funny take as often as he could put it in. When I was about 9 years old or so, I had the chance to be able to go off to the world premiere of the Paul McCartney masterpiece, Give My Regards to Broad Street. And I remember my mom heard on the radio where it was going to be premiering in Santa Monica or downtown LA. It's one of those. I don't remember exactly. And I remember she wanted to go down there because it was going to be the Beatles were going to be there, at least 3 out of the 4. This was 1985. And she was very excited about that. I would grow into being a Beatles fan, but at that point, I couldn't really have cared any less, I think. So we went down, and I remember that the streets were kind of cordoned off, but packed with fans. And there was this one area that we were in that was under construction. And at one point, my mom told me to turn to her and smile. And I did. And I didn't know why. Later on, George Harrison and Ringo Starr arrived for the premiere. And I remember them being announced. And then I remember the distinct moment that Paul McCartney came. It was this stretch limousine. And the window rolled down, McCartney's arm went out the window just holding like a handkerchief, and swarms of people just descended on that limo. Like, they were determined that they were going to meet a Beatle that night. And I got caught up in it. I started to just go, just because that's the way the crowd was going, and my mom pulled me back. And after all that was said and done, and we just sort of went about our way because we weren't going to go and see the movie, we went and had dinner at Arby's, and my mom told me, she goes, you know, when I told you to turn and smile at me, and I took your picture, it's because right behind you was Weird Al. And she told me that he got himself into some sort of like funny pose and had a funny look on his face, and she snapped a picture of both of us. And I thought, I can't wait until the film is developed. We had a Kodak, I think it was, I don't remember what it was. It was kind of had like a disc film sort of thing in it. And I remember it being this like rectangle-ish kind of thing. It was different than most cameras at the time. And so we finished dinner and we were leaving the restaurant when my mom said, uh-oh, I don't have my camera. And we went back and we looked in the trash can. We looked at the table. That camera, nowhere to be seen at all. I've told people over the years that I posed twice, actually, with pictures with Weird Al. And I have zero proof of this ever. The next time was sometime in the, about 1999, at the Antelope Valley Fair. My friend Russell, his family owned Round Table Pizzas, and they asked if I wanted to go to the fair, and Weird Al was going to be performing, and they had these, like, meet and greet tickets. I thought, oh, this is great, and it was a photo op as well. Russ's Uncle Mike and his Aunt Nancy arranged their kids and him and me, and I was, like, on the outskirts, and Weird Al was somewhere in the middle. And they took the picture, and a couple weeks later, when Uncle Mike got it, I did not receive a copy at all. I have a feeling because of where I was, I just got cropped out, which is fine. But I have twice in my life crossed paths with Weird Al. I saw him in concert at Knott's Berry Farm when it was Knott's Scary Farm for Halloween. I stood in this long line, went, saw him in the 80s. It was great. It's probably the most 80s of 80s experiences I could have had other than seeing the Jacksons on their Victory Tour in 84. So I also saw Weird Al in 1999 with my friend Russ, and then again in 2008, just before I moved out of California. And all of this is leading me to say that Weird Al is awesome. Some people like him, some people love him, some people just can't stand him, and they don't understand his manic energy. And as he's gotten older, it's just gotten, you know, disproportionate to his age. But I'm here to tell you now all about Alfred Matthew Yankovic. He was born in Downey, California in October of 1959. His parents were Nick and Mary. He was an only child. There's a very well-told story that there was a door-to-door salesman who came by the Yankovic household when Al was like 9 or 10 or so, and said that he was a music teacher and could provide lessons to their child. Did he want to learn how to play the accordion or the guitar? And his mom picked the accordion because there was a well-known accordion player at that time named Frankie Yankovic, and there was no relation. Now, Al Yankovic, he grew up in a house. His father believed that the key to success was doing whatever made you happy for a living. And apparently, as the story goes, Al was reminded of this by his father quite a bit. So Al took an interest in music, and specifically the accordion, and was trying to use it for all it was worth. And apparently, it made him happy. Now, again, Al's parents picked the accordion for their son because they felt that there should be one more accordion-playing Yankovic in the world. And Al has also said that they were convinced it would revolutionize rock. Take that with a grain of salt, I am sure. Now, apparently in his childhood, Al, his mom didn't let him go outside to play very much, so he had plenty of time to practice the instrument at home. And he continued with school and his lessons for years, and then he continued learning on his own when the lessons pretty much ran out. Now, in the 70s, Yankovic was a big fan of Elton John, specifically the album Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. And he used that album to learn how to play rock and roll on his squeeze box. Because when you only have lemons, you learn how to make lemonade any way you can. Now, around this time, he was also being influenced by various comedy albums that probably predated him pretty good, like Stan Freberg and Spike Jones and Tom Lehrer and, of course, Alan Sherman, the poems of Shel Silverstein, and, of course, music by Frank Zappa, as well as a lot of other artists out there that he heard on the Dr. Demento radio show. And chances are he was also influenced by things like Mad Magazine and Monty Python and the absurd movies of Zucker Abrams and Zucker, like Airplane and Kentucky Fried Movie and things of that nature. It's also said that he enjoyed the album FM and AM, and he transcribed it on a typewriter. That album, of course, is from the late, great George Carlin. Now, when Yankovic went to school, he entered kindergarten a year early and skipped over second grade. And he was quoted as saying, "My classmates seemed to think I was some kind of rocket scientist, so I was labeled a nerd early on." He would go on to attend Linwood High School. He was younger than everyone else by 2 years. He also graduated at the age of 16 and was valedictorian. Now, after graduating high school, he went on to the California Polytechnic State University in San Luis Obispo. And he majored in architecture, and he would eventually get his bachelor's degree in that particular art. Now, while he was at college, I know he took an interest in college radio. He produced some demos, he sent them out, and he would send one to Dr. Demento. And according to Weird Al, if not for Dr. Demento, he'd probably have a real job now. So he sent off his demo to Dr. Demento, and he got some exposure because of that. Now, after he graduated college, he went to work for Westwood One. He worked in the mailroom and then calling radio stations confirming that paid advertisements were going to be run on the air. So he was basically a gopher at that point, mailroom guy, gopher. But he was in that particular field, Westwood One. It's where Casey Kasem recorded the top 40 every week for his show. So not really in bad company. In 1976, Weird Al had a chance to meet Dr. Demento. Demento came to his school and spoke, and Weird Al put a cassette into his hand. He said that it was a cheesy little tape that he recorded on a cheap tape recorder. The first song on that tape was Belvedere Cruisin', about the family's Plymouth Belvedere. and that would be the song that would be played on Dr. Demento's radio show, and gave him kind of a little bit of fame because of that. Dr. Demento would say, "Belvedere Cruising might not have been the very best song I've ever heard, but it had some clever lines. I put the tape on the air immediately." Now, on the next episode, when we continue, I'll give you the origin of his nickname and tell you how his career started. Well, that's it for now. Join us next time when we explore more 80s and 90s pop culture. If you've got any memories of this or other things from the best decades, email me at satmornpod@hotmail.com. And if you're a fan of the 80s or cartoons from the 80s, be sure to check out the Saturday Morning Podcast hosted by me. We drop a new episode every other Saturday and hope it'll make you feel like a kid again. And now, back to our regularly scheduled program.